Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the stay-at-home edition of Story Break, the Writer's Room podcast, where three Hollywood professionals write an entire screenplay week by week, page by page, one scene at a time. My name is Freddie Wong. I'm your host. I'm your bud. I'm also a guy who has more facial hair on him than I've ever had at any point.
Oh!
And it's enough where, and doing a little bit of reading, there's not a lot of resources for Asian guys trying to grow any amount of facial hair. There's none. It's crazy. It really is crazy.
I think
crazy.
It's mostly support groups.
Yeah, because I have questions, but no answers online. And I can't ask any of the other males in my family because nobody, like generations going back, has facial hair in the Wong family. So I'm kind of on my own.
What are you talking about? Are you talking about like conditioner and shit? Is that like, is that how full you're going?
No, I'm just like, is this too patchy? I don't know what to expect. I'm just in such uncharted territory right now, guys.
Just send us a pic and I'll give you my unvarnished opinion on it, Freddie. We're your collaborators. If nothing, we know how to give creative feedback to you on your personal projects.
Yeah, or ask any of the women we know. Ask Beth, or you know, send me a pic. I'll tell Ash.
No. My question is this. This is a really specific question. Is my hair follicle density on my face too sparse? Because I'm not sure. And I don't know.
That's a look thing.
If you can get yourself to a Tony Leung goatee look, you're golden, my dude.
Listen, what do you think my Google image search has been for the last...
Also, like, Tony Leung's got a lot of stuff going on around the beard, too. Like,
yeah, so do I. And especially downstairs, if you know what I mean.
Okay, as long as we're chatting beards, my dad's growing a beard for the first time ever. And
his whole life.
And it's literally his whole life. My grandfather had a goatee, but my dad never once grew a beard. And I literally had to talk to my therapist about it because that was how I felt. I was like, it triggered like this deep Oedipal part of my brain where I was like, but I have a beard. My dad can grow a beard.
You want
that's
your mom with your dad watching? Wait, what?
All right.
Oh, I'm Matt Arnold.
No. If you guys are going to make me, come on. That is bad faith. You guys understand the Freudian notion of the Oedipal complex.
Oh,
you don't?
Which one is that one? I'm actually honestly confused on this.
But it is specifically about the opposite sex of your parent.
No, but it's the Oedipal complex is your desire as a man to kill your father and sleep with your mother, right? Like, that's the Oedipus story. It's not just about fucking your mom. It's also about killing your dad.
Jealousy,
right?
And so anger towards
it is
the rivalry of the same sex. I see.
It is a cultural metaphor. It is a Darmok and Jalad et Tanagra to explain the way that you feel towards your parents, you know, as it's like a rivalry, a jealousy.
What happens if you want to fight your mom and fuck your dad, though?
I don't know what that's called.
And also, Will, why would I ever be jealous of my dad? He doesn't have 400,000 Twitter followers. If anything, my kid will be crazy jealous of me for how good I am at TikTok.
Let's just cut this out. I feel weird getting into this. My parents listen to the podcast. Let's move on. I'm Will Campos. I am encouraging Freddie to grow a beard. Come on in, Freddie. The water's fine over here in beard country.
It's weird. I think I'm in the scratchy phase for sure.
Yeah, that'll happen.
But I think for Asian guys, the scratchy phase lasts 4 years.
My beard has gotten so long that I've now passed the sweet spot where it's not scratchy and it looks filled out. And now it's scratchy again because it's just slowly devouring my entire face.
Yeah, let me tell you though, Will, I'm on an island here. I don't know what's going on with this thing.
Cam, our intern who was a little baby face, has a beard now, and like I asked him what does he do for his beard, and it took him like 3 minutes to explain all the regimen.
Oils and conditioners.
Fucking Cam, our baby-faced intern. The last time we saw him, and he was just like this rosy-cheeked little blonde boy. And then the next time we saw him, I shit you not, he looked like the fucking Spec Ops guy from the cover of Modern Warfare.
Yep.
From the new Medal of Honor game. Do you remember there was a Medal of Honor covered with a yoked dude with a huge blonde beard? Like, that's who he turned into. I was like,
what's the thing
fuck?
Now? Like, all like that's like the veteran beard now. Like, the military beard is like, everybody's wearing that beard. But like, my point is like, is it scratchy because you're not doing like three different types of oils and like conditioner and stuff?
No, I do a Spec Ops screenwriting beard. This is what all the pro screenwriters wear, you know. It's because we're too busy in the shit breaking stories. All right, anyway.
God.
I'm Will Campos. Who are you?
Yeah, I'm Matt Arnold. I had some bits, but I think we're past bits now. So let's let's go ahead and get into, I think we're going to finish this movie.
And we're into the meat. The movie that we're writing, by the way, a little ditty we call Heaven Heist. And we're approaching the end of it. This heist movie with a crew of criminals trying to rob the Celestial Bank of Heaven. They were last week in purgatory.
They did what I think is the longest by time montage in cinema history in terms of time covered.
Point of order, there is that episode of Doctor Who that Matt loves that I don't like, where they montage over the Doctor punching like a wall of diamond for like a trillion years.
Doctor Who fans is heaven sent, so if you want to send your hate mail to Will, you can go ahead and do that now that he doesn't like heaven sent. Also,
joke's on you, Matt. It is a known law of Doctor Who that there is no Doctor Who episode that more than 50% of Doctor Who fans enjoy,
except for Blink and Heaven Sent. I was gonna say that, what's that movie with like Hugh Jackman where his wife dies three times? Like that movie has
The Fountain.
Yeah, The Fountain. That's like the span of the universe, so I think they beat us.
I've always made this comparison. Doctor Who is like Rush. The people who are into it are crazy into it, but even the people who are into it acknowledge that like some of them just suck. Like sometimes it just sucks. But when it's good,
Star Trek's
good.
Like that too. If you're a true Star Trek fan, like you've got that energy, right? Like it's like you acknowledge that it's like I adore this show, but it also is goofy as fuck.
All healthy fan bases are like that.
Yes, this is very true.
It's the toxic ones that can't agree that there are just sometimes, man, it's
too goofy.
Yeah.
You're onto something there though, Matt, because I think maybe that was the original foundational sin of the Star Wars fandom, is that three really good movies came out and a fandom grew around three really good movies and kind of calcified and came of age with this incredibly high expectation before things got goofy and bad. But now it's like you kind of see like it just took a very long time to process that because people love the prequels now, even though the prequels are goofy and bad.
But there's also kind of that no true Scotsman like fallacy with them too, where it's like there was bad Star Wars stuff, the Ewok movies and the Hollywood special, but like they separate out. They're like, well, that's not Star Wars.
That's not real Star Wars. Yeah.
It's like, just accept that. Not everything in your fandom, you know, not everything's going to be good.
That's a good point. Yeah, you're right.
Of course, Zelda has no flaws and the CDI ones don't count. So,
yeah, because Abrams also helmed, you know, Star Trek. And there was like grumblings here and there. But like, I'll put it this way. My impression of Star Trek was like, oh, these are like just fun sci-fi movies. Whereas like even my dad will be like, hey, Freddie, did the last Star Wars movie suck? I was like, how, Dad, you don't even like these movies. Like even he had got through the cultural grapevine that he was like, I think this movie really sucked. I was like, Dad, we didn't even see it. Like, what do you mean?
But that's exactly the point, is that like around when Into Darkness came out, if you went up to a Star Trek fan, you're like, guys, you're never gonna believe this, the new Star Trek movie is bad. They'd be like, and like, welcome to the last 20 years of my life. Like, there are more bad Star Trek movies than good ones. So it's just, anyways. We should talk about our movie.
Yeah. It feels like with this, you know why we're loose, Wills? Because this feels like we're approaching the end and we're just
done.
Letting out the gas a little bit.
We're basically done. Okay, so when last we left off, Jin has had his spiritual epiphany.
Yeah.
He's come up with this plan to sacrifice himself to save everybody else. And they're all about to jump down the portal. So really, it's just a gunfight and then Jin dies. And then you probably have Jin's death scene with the gang, which has got to be a nice tearjerker. And then I feel like you cut to he probably meets Yama, right?
Mm-hmm.
We do one last montage of him getting dropped down to hell and facing Yama's judgment. And then he burns off his karma for his bad deeds for a couple thousand years. And then he's reborn as a beautiful tree, you know, with his brother, right? And that's the movie.
Yeah. So depending on like how big those scenes are, it could be two episodes.
This
but
feels
if you do,
pretty tight to me. Like this actually doesn't feel like any of that is anything you want to be spending a major.
Yeah, agreed.
Time
I think
on,
it goes
you know?
Quickly. So getting to it, the only real question I have is essentially, and maybe it's just a thing that we have to set up in a previous episode that we should have done. It's just that final moment of like he is in his brother's garden and his brother and mom are like starting a new life after the hospital burned down or whatever. Do we want the family to know, like, does his brother know that this tree is Jin?
Oh, I don't think so, no.
And then how do we, whether or not it's the brother or us, how do we know the tree is Jin?
It's a Jin tree, obviously.
It's a Jin tree. You could do a trippy fountain-esque thing where we see his soul get reborn and, you know, like you watch it sprout into a tree. Like, you could go that committed to it.
Oh, okay, this would be good. Yeah. Because then what you could do is, yes, you can do, he's getting reincarnated, and then, yes, it's this trippy sequence of, like, his physical form in hell gets destroyed, and you see this, you know, floating whatever enigma of a spiritual, whatever the image is, and it's like, you see, it's like, what is it? Is it in a capsule? Is that a cell? Is it an amoeba? Is this, like, his fertilized eggs? Like, wait, no, it's a seed over in soil, and then it's, like, sprouting, and it grows, and you can do, like, a time lapse of this tree growing, and then like you know like either a house is already there or like somebody moves out, and then it's like you're seeing this like tree grow in this backyard, and then all of a sudden time like goes back to normal speed, and like, oh, who's this? Who's the new buyer of the house? Who's coming in? And it's like, it's his brother and his mom, you know, like age, and they come in and like puts his mom underneath like the tree for
shade.
How
much time has passed here?
Well, I mean, just gonna be, if he's going to become a tree, I mean, it depends. Does he just become a tree that's already alive? Or are you going
to
do that?
Oh,
like,
I guess, yes, you would have to do that. It's a tree that would.
And then he's going
to
give his elderly mom shade, and his brother and his mom are okay. Like, you, what you see is like, you don't have to see like, how does his brother recover from the hospital? Like, it's like, yeah, no, years later, like his brother and his mom are fine. Like, their life has moved on, you know, since they lost him. But, like, you know, they're alive and fine. Or do they just pop into a
well,
tree?
Well, the waiting list for new trees is pretty long.
You have to bribe the admissions people in hell to get into a good tree. I'm trying to think if there is a subtle way to imply that the tree is gin that isn't, like, doesn't mean you have to see
oh,
it.
Oh, I got it. I got it.
It's smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, like a chipmunk, like, gives it a cigarette, and the tree goes, thanks, monk. And then, like, the chipmunk has a little lighter, and it strikes up a cigarette and smokes tobacco cigarettes.
Like, what's the better surprise, really? What's the better way to play this scene? Because, like, you're going to have to do something cheesy. I mean, not cheesy. You're going to have to do something like, if you had a birthmark, it'd be like, oh, the tree has a birthmark. You know, it's gin. It's either you follow the brother and the mom into a scene, and then you're like, oh, this tree that they're at is gin. Or you're with Jin, and it's like he's turned into a tree, which I kind of like more, because it's like kind of like you're seeing, okay, Jin's reincarnated, like he's a tree now. And then the final moment of the movie, because you're with Jin's perspective, is like he's rewarded by he's going to spend his days as a tree with his family that he cares about, mm-hmm. as opposed to like Jin's dead. And now we're going to see kind of like a nothing scene with like his mom and his brother kind of come in, and they're like, oh, hi. You're like, okay, yeah. I guess I'm with them to see what happens. And then you're like, oh, I guess this tree's gin.
No, that's true. That's true. So to walk through the sequencing of that, we see him die. It does feel like we should see Yama again. Like, I want to see Yama get his man, so to speak. And then it feels like you want to do that. Is the implication Jin goes off and gets disemboweled for 1,000 years or whatever? Like, he's got to go do his time. And then, like, we see him get out of jail. Like, how does that chunk of it work? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, or does he just get instantly reincarnated?
No, I mean, he's got to go to hell.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're into Baby Driver territory. If it just feels like he didn't have any fucking real consequences for all this shitty stuff. Like, I know that he's had a change of heart, but it's like, it feels like he should still have to pay the karmic
balance.
And he
is a tree. At least he doesn't get a car and the lady still at the end.
So, I don't know. I keep thinking of, like, those moments. Like, there's nothing I love more than like a good, the guy gets out of prison scene, like at the beginning of Blues Brothers, where they're like pack of cigarettes, you know, one, you know, pair of sunglasses or whatever. But then at the same time, it's like the movie feels pretty over. I don't know if I want to see him go into hell, because I also don't, you obviously clearly don't want to see Jin get his guts ripped out, like, right?
Yeah.
But then do you like he goes in and then like he comes out again? Like, I don't feel like I need to see that. Right?
Yeah. No, you don't.
It feels like he goes in and then you just cut to, you know, he's getting let out and he's going into a light. It's all montage. Yeah, I don't need
nitty gritty. Yeah.
If this was a Scrubs episode, this is when like the Strokes would start playing and it would kind of just like wrap up. You'd be like, okay, like you see him go into hell and Yama like signals down and he's like nods his head and then he like goes through the doors and
you
then
see him
go
through the gates of hell. Yeah. I feel like
you
that's
see him go through the
sure.
gates of hell and then you cut to Tequila giving airplane tickets to everybody and saying bye to everybody. And, you know, he wistfully looks off at the pier where him and Jin had his fight. They also are starting their lives over or whatever. Then you cut to like the son coming in and telling the mom the news and she cries. But again, this is all over music. You're not seeing it. You don't want to see Jin like, well, you cut to Jin like eating,
getting his
eating hearts out of himself for 100,000 years.
But to go along with that, if you were gonna do, and it's Scrubs is the perfect thing because it's like this Scrubs pull is fucking jack move so many times where it's like we're gonna get a sad somber indie song and we're gonna cross cut over a funeral and Zach Braff crying and so. But if you were gonna do that, if you were gonna do a Scrubs move, then yeah, it feels like if you do all that and then we see Jin walk into the gates of hell, right? It does feel like you could cut to a garden and we saw like a little flower growing out of the ground. Well, I would understand that that's gin. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you might need a little bit more than that. Yeah, I was thinking about this just now. You can do a subtle way of doing it, but you need to lay in a lot more groundwork prior. Like, you need to be able to have like a conversation where someone mentions that, oh, you could be reincarnated as a blah, 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 or an even a tree.
You if you don't mention like, the idea of a flower,
and by the way, to me, montage wise, it goes, you see him walk in, and then you see everyone else is in the crew's lives. So we see what happens to Tequila. We see blah, blah, blah. We see so-and-so. And then where you would expect to see Jin, it's on a tree. You know what I mean? Like, you use the cinematic language to be like, oh, it's
that's
that.
Interesting.
And then you see, you know what I mean? Because it feels like I want to see the rest of the crew, and then the last person, like, who's the last person I haven't seen on the crew yet? We're not getting any updates from him. And you see this tree grow, and you see the brother lay a loving hand on it. And that's a way that I think you can subtly imply it without needing to go into, this is definitely him. It's a more... like, yeah, it's him, and we're not going to be explicit about it, way of approaching it.
That's fun.
So what's...
Oh, no, what were you going
to
say?
There's just two things. One, I'm just trying to think of, like, I don't know how much... Do you want to do, like, a Animal House? Like, you see what everybody's life is? Or, like, I don't know how much of the crew you...
No, but, okay.
I don't know if they all have, like, individual scenes.
No, but, okay, let me...
Let me
throw that at you. If you were going to do, like, 6 Feet Under that shows how everyone dies at the end, like... Mm-hmm. If you were going to do that, like, Jin's death moment, right, is telling them all to live a good life, right? Because he's got his gang around him, right? And he would kind of exhort them to, you know, like, to learn the lesson. And then if you were going to then do this montage, and then you see, like, the few of them that do and then some of them don't actually go on to live better lives, like, I could see that being kind of interesting and poetic as you're doing this kind of rebirth thing with Jin. I don't know, food for thought. Like, if you were gonna then see, you know, Tequila finally retire and open a bar, and, you know, Whiskey goes back to school, and then you see, like, Brandy, like, does not reform at all, and, you know, she's getting fucking hauled off by the cops, you know, like, that kind of thing. I don't know, like, there could be something to play there that would feel kind of poignant.
I mean, just
I
to
know.
Push back, it feels like we're moving away from, like, a clean, efficient ending to, like, even as a TV show, I'd be a little bit like, all right, like, I really don't
at
care
the
what...
very least, you need the scene of Tequila giving everyone plane tickets and everyone.
Yeah, exactly. I think
bye.
That's all, because that's the end of the dramatic arc, yeah. Which is like, okay, they got away. And Jin
right,
telling
fine.
Them, like, live a good life. I'm like, okay, like, I get.
And they probably will, right?
But... I mean, maybe you just have to build more of the characters and then just be like, how long do we want this kind of to go? It is like, yeah, we're close to, like, a very succinct ending, which is always nice. Like, it should feel like a punch that he dies.
Yeah, then you want to get out pretty quick.
Yeah, like, you almost want to be able to just get to, like, he's dead, and, you know, it's like Cowboy Bebop, be like, oh, and then the shooting star goes across. It's like a subtle, it's just like a thing. It's like, here's, like, he dies, but he dies for the right reason, and you feel like this crew is, you know, going to make it after all.
Other than making sure the audience gets that Jin is the tree, I feel like the last shot of Jin, if you can figure out a way to go from Jin walks through the gates of hell to then we cut to... your final image, so to speak. Like, I don't need anything else from Jin. Like, it's kind of, to me, just a question of how do you artfully do that?
You just put it's like Gates of Hell, it's the crew going their own way, and then it's, you know what I mean?
It's too bad. You'd have to set this up at some point. Like, the idea of, like, what do you see right before you die or something, which is kind of weird because obviously we see the whole afterlife. But, like, if as he's dying, like, whatever your final moment is, and then he's, like, truly, like, he's bleeding out and, like, you know, he's getting delirious. Like, you're like, mm-hmm. Oh, Jin's gone. Like,
yeah.
It's this... sunshine, like, what do you see? It's Jin talking and be like, I feel the wind, there's, like, grass below me.
No,
he's
that
like,
doesn't
what
work.
Do you see?
No.
No?
No, we see you go to a fucking boat when you die. Like, and he's got to go to hell. You know, he doesn't get to be... Exactly. Yeah, no, I see what you're
no,
going
what you
for,
think?
But it's,
be
just,
like,
it's
be like,
more
I see
confused.
My, I see, and then you fade to the tree, and you're like, okay,
no,
I get a vision. Like, that's
no,
the tree.
You
got
to see him go to hell, and, like, we've done so much explicit work showing literally exactly what... Jin has literally died multiple times in the movie before.
I know.
Yeah, I get it. It's poetic, but, like, it doesn't...
You want him on the boat, and you want to see the boat thing come down, and then everyone's waiting for him already. He's like, all right, time to get this over with.
Yeah, you know? Then I don't know. It feels like we already had it. It feels like you see, outside of what, how much you want to see of hell, like, once you go into hell, then I think you can be close to the chest with what happens to the crew. I don't think you can be close to the chest with what you're doing with Jin if you're going to show him in the afterlife, because it's no longer poetic. It is like he's going to hell, he's meeting the Judge Yama, and we're going to have to show that he turns into a tree. So I think the way to do it is, yes, I think you do the Scrubsy montage and you show just a little bit, you know, the last moments you need to see, like, of the crew and whatnot, and then you are seeing Jin, yes, maybe he's on the boat and he, like, he walks up knowing where he's gonna go, you know, he, like, salutes the guard at the scanner and he, you know, the thing opens up below him and he drops right in because he knows he's going to hell, and mm-hmm. Yama's there and he nods and, you know, bows down and asks for forgiveness, like, he knows what he's done or yeah, whatever yeah. It is, and then yeah, I think when you come up with what the visual is for when his time is done, but then I think you go from that to whatever visual you want to show.
I know, that's what I was like, what is that? that's the thing I'm trying to figure out. There is also like a, it's tough. Like it does feel like it would maybe feel like bullshit, but you could do like, he plummets to hell, he's before Yama, he kneels prostrate in front of Yama's judgment, and then you would see like a little smile curl on Yama's lips, and he would, you know, point, and Jin would walk through a gate, but then as Jin is walking through the gate, instead of seeing flames, he sees light, and he's reincarnated. Like, you could do that?
I mean, my pitch myself is like, I still think the most interesting thing to do there would be to go from whatever this afterlife moment is, a gate that we haven't seen before, and visually transition to... It feels like if you cut to a thing in like a tree, there's no, you're in that scene, you're gonna have to have the brother or somebody be like, that's the tree, that's Jin. Otherwise, I just don't know.
All right, I'm not, like, okay, yeah. But
no, I'm talking through it. No, exactly. So I feel like the right thing is, he goes to the gate and everything goes white. And then what's that white? It's like, it's a spark of life. And then you see it's a seed. And then it's a, you see that this is a seed that grows into a tree. And this tree grows. You're like, oh, Jin's a tree. Like, Jin got reincarnated. And then the final punch, like the final moment of the movie is, it's not just that he was reincarnated into a tree. It's you come down and you see this is a tree that's giving shade to his brother and his mom. And he's
in that case, I would do that. I think Jin's act of sacrifice, right, to save his crew gets him off the hook.
Yeah, gets him
off
the hook.
In terms of going to
just
hell.
Just like in the beginning.
It's just like at the beginning, right? In terms of him getting obliterated, you know. And I think as long as we feel like Jin feels like he is going to go face hell, you know, and like, I think that's even something he can say in the scene when he's dying, you know, that he's expecting to face Yama's wrath and to have to go do his bit or whatever. You would do Yama points solemnly to this door, right? And it's this wrought iron, gnarly, doom ass looking door. And Jin kind of closes his eyes in resignation. And then as he's walking, you see this smile curl on Yama's lips. And then Jin opens the door and it's white light and he gasps. And then he steps through it. And I think literally I would just see Jin's body break apart. You know, like, and disintegrate essentially, and then kind of turn into this, you know, seed. And then you do this thing where he grows into this tree.
Yes.
You see this sapling tree kind of grow and grow and grow. And then you would see, you know, his brother sit down and meditate underneath it or something like that.
Again, especially if you can do the trees grow, then it's definitely been time, which I like. I like that you see this passage of time, but there's something like beautiful about, like, you hear like a wheel and it's like his brother is pushing his like grandma and his mom in a wheelchair to underneath his tree and sits down with her or whatever, and they're like having tea or something, and you're like, oh, he's with his family.
I would just make it at the temple, like you do. There's a garden at his brother's temple, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think you need to get into, you know, like anything with the hospital or anything like that. It's I don't know why his mom would move either, so I think you would do just it's there at the garden in his temple or whatever, and you can kind of see that as you crane out. Why do they move? What is that? It's not like her house burned down.
I think you're getting caught in the logic as opposed to like I think the strongest emotional effect is seeing Jin with his whole family, not just like his brother meditates under the tree. And I feel like anything is kind of logically, it's
I'm saying you should see his mom there. You see his mom, he wheels his mom up and they sit under the tree or whatever. I just don't know.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I'm just like, what is the location? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, where is the tree? Like, physically, literally.
Whatever makes sense to you guys. To me, it's either way. It's you know, it's one way is the coincidence is his brother happened to pick the seed and put it in the garden. The other way is that, like, you know, this tree was in this house that they ended up like going to at some point. So like, if it's easier to let's just do the temple. I guess we just want to make sure the temple is not burnt.
What if it's a tree on the surface of Mars because Musk got us there? You know what I'm saying?
Finally. Yeah, the temple makes sense. Or even the mom's house. I guess the temple. I guess I'm also conflating the temple with the hospital, like the same place.
Well, they're not.
Yeah. I personally like the image of home more than like he's at this temple. Not that it's like, it's just, you know, Jin, even with it here, it's not like Jin's like religious, and the idea of like he was a guy who was like running away from home and his family, so it just feels, I like the imagery of him being at a like a tree in his family's home.
The tricky thing is, we definitely feel Lily lives in an apartment. And
they have like a little garden outside.
Sure. Fine. I mean, like, and maybe that's something that you would plant earlier, you know, if you were going to do it. It would just feel like, it does feel like this, wherever this is, like if you want that to track, it should be a location we've seen before. Or you just make him, he's a little bonsai tree. He's in the apartment.
She's like, this shit doesn't give me any shade. I don't know why I keep fucking with it.
No, because a bonsai requires a lot of care. As opposed to the other way around.
So this final image then is the tree grows, and then what are the mom and brother doing? Do you want the brother to meditate under the tree? What's the thought?
I feel like it's more succinct if he just pops her down and they're just like, you know, just sitting there or just like having tea or something, you know?
So they're having a picnic under this tree.
Yes. Like my pitch was that if you are explicitly seeing it from the birth of a seed on, like you are definitely telling the audience this is 10 years later. Because a tree takes a long time to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So you are passing time. So you've essentially thrown everything out in terms of what the setup is. Like you're like the audience, like 10 years later, and you see a tree growing wherever you have it grow. Like if it's like in a park or whatever. So the idea that like time's passing by and this tree is growing, and then what's this? What's this sign of life? It's like then Jin and Freddy is wheeling his elderly mother to underneath the tree, you know, because there's like a little like table underneath it, and sits down and, you know, pours her a cup of tea, and they, you know, they're talking nicely as mother and son, and you're like, oh shit, like the son is still taking care of the mother and they're happy and they've bounced back from this destruction of the hospital, and little do they know, who are they sitting under? It's Jin, you know, and he's giving them shade.
And then, okay, just sorry, I know I'm being pedantic, but
no, I think
it's important. Like, it's like, if this is just a public park, it's different than like if this is like their home, right? Like, it's like if their home is like the and one is like, oh, okay, he became this tree, and then at one point his brother and his mom had a picnic under him, as opposed to like you were reborn as the tree in your brother's backyard is kind of what you're going for, right?
Yes.
Okay.
What if you did, depending on how crazy you do it, since we kind of did this with the wrench sort of thing, it's like you can do, I mean, I don't know. There's also like a fun version where it's like you do this seed and then like the seed gets ripped away and it's being carried because a bird is carrying a leaf in a, you know, to its nest. And then this, you know, this leaf goes falling through the sky and then lands in a pile of dirt, you know, and it's like you're playing this kind of like
student film quarter movie. You know what I'm referring to there, Will?
No.
Everybody at some point makes a student film about the journey of a quarter or a dollar bill or something like that. And all the crazy places the dollar bill goes.
In terms of like what we're shooting for, it seems like what we're shooting is this is in the backyard of a house, right? Like that's what you want the implication to be, because he's with his family forever.
She's just moved at some point.
Okay. So we're in the backyard of a house in the country or something like that. And then maybe you do a line about, okay, this is how you do it. And this would be a draft two thing, is you would have some line earlier on about how the mom always wanted to retire and move out to the country. You know what I mean? Like you would do something like that. And then you would do, although I guess in Hong Kong, it's an island, right?
Yeah, there's like, yeah, but like, you know, you'll have to be in Hong Kong either. They can move somewhere else.
Yeah. I guess that's true. So like, if you were going to do that, yes, they wanted to move. So it's like the Antarctica stuff in Hard Boiled.
Yes.
All right. Here you go. Here's what I would do. Her apartment is like luau themed or something like that. And she's always wanted to move to Hawaii. And then you would do like, but like they've never been able to put the money together because, you know, Jin's a crook who's never been able to, you know, scrape together enough dough, and his brother's a penniless priest. Right. So then you would do that at the end. You would do, especially when he's dying, he's like, look after my family. Right. Like, cause they all made it out with the money.
So they gave
the money to the grandma. And now when he grows, you see, oh shit, he's a palm tree in Hawaii. And you do the grandma's on the beach and the brother's strumming a ukulele or something like that. And they have a little house on the beach in Hawaii, and they move.
Yes. I think the idea that he gives the money to them, and yes, you've established that the mom lives in this really rundown apartment, and, you know, again, yes, part of Jin's sense of failure is like he blames his older brother, but he also blames himself. That's like he, you know, he can't get his mom a real place to live.
Mom is constantly cooking up Mai Tais.
No, it's a nice little kind of detail for Lily too. All right, so yeah, let's go with that.
Now it'd be pedantic. Do we like?
I don't know if it has to be Hawaii.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a palm tree as weird as it is. Like he goes to like.
I mean it feels like symbolically he should be an orange tree, right?
Oh, that's great. Yes.
Yeah, I think someone on the Facebook said that. Thank you to whoever's suggestion that was.
And then they're sitting under there, and then orange drops on his mom's head, and you're like, oh, that's sweet.
And cigarette, and the orange is smoking a cigarette. Is that what you were saying? I know exactly what you were saying, Matt.
She takes a bite.
And then she turns it around, and it's got a big old Marlboro Red lit and hanging out of its little orange mouth. Is that what you wanted to say?
No, but the idea that them sitting down at the table and then like an orange like falls on the plate or something is kind of funny.
That is kind of cute.
Even if it's like the son is like has like a salad bowl and is like, you know, like serving his mom, and the orange like plops in. and like drops the bowl.
Okay, if we're not gonna do Hawaii, where do you want it to be?
Like a beach house, maybe. Yeah, just do a beach house or something.
Yeah, I always wanted
to South China Sea beach house.
You can even do specifically like
but guys, if we make it Hawaii, we can close out the movie with a Jimmy Buffett song.
You can just say house in the country with like an orange tree in the backyard or something. Like you even have like she just like that's always kind of her dream, and then it's like yeah,
you just don't want it to be a palm tree.
Yeah, I don't think it's a palm. It just doesn't.
I'm gonna throw an alternative at you. You make it the hospital. They've rebuilt the hospital. There's a garden in the hospital. He grows there. And then the last scene is this is where his brother works, right? So then you do it. His brother wheels his mom out in a wheelchair and they sit down and have a meal.
There we go. Yes.
Yeah, let's just do that.
I like that.
Like, we don't need to fucking do
anything. And it's the gin. It's the gin wing.
It's the gin, whatever their last name is, Memorial Hospital. But then you do that. Yeah. They clearly gave a lot of their money from the heist to the brother. Do you know what
yes.
I mean? To
there
rebuild
we go.
The hospital.
Yeah, so it's just similar to, I forgot about that part because we were going to say that his money was used for good things. Yes, his back at the hospital has been rebuilt.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. I like that. Okay. All right, cool. All right, just to circle back for a split second onto the action scene. So they're going to dive in. It does feel like it's pretty much, it's a cool action scene, right? Like we see they're supernaturally moving left and right. You know, we see Cognac save Whiskey's life, and you know there's gunfights and like it's all this like precise tactical, you know, they're throwing the stuff, and then the last scene is the moment we just saw where he slides underneath instead of Billy the Kid slides underneath Mrs. Wonderful, and then you hear these gunshots go off, and then everyone's like we did it, and they look over and Jin's still on the ground.
There's the classic Jin turns around and smiles at them and then drops.
So
even the audience is surprised. It's like we did, and Jin's like we did.
Yeah,
and then bleh, he spits out blood, and they all go. Yeah. Ah! And he drops to the floor, and they run, and he's got, like...
Okay.
Is it one bullet hole, or is it absurd? Has he opened up his jacket? He's been shot, like, 65 times.
And then Cognac goes, I know how to fix this, and stitches him up perfectly because she spent 10,000 years learning how to do surgery.
I mean, is that this movie, because it's not silly. It's like he opens up one side of his jacket, and it's a bullet hole, and Whiskey's like, it's okay, it's one bullet, I can fix this. And she pulls out the needle from Whiskey, and she's about to, and then he opens up his other side of the jacket. It's like 16 bullets. And holds it his other side of the chest, and they're like, it's over.
And she's like, I'm a doctor who has had an eternity to practice. Let me try. And then she does it.
Oh. Yep. And then we rewrite our whole ending we came up with. It reminds me, there's that great gag in The Simpsons where, like, things from the What If in the Future episodes where it's like Mr. Burns is frozen in like cryostasis. And then Mr. Smithers is like, don't worry, sir. Like, once we come up with a cure for 18 stab wounds to the chest, we'll unfreeze you. He's like, how's it coming, boys? And they're like, we're up to 16.
It's so good.
All right, so and then so he has his death scene where he's gonna, you know, wish them well and tell them to live better lives, and you know he's like, it's okay, it's time for me to, you know, I raised enough hell on earth, it's time for me to pay my due.
I like the thing we came up with last episode where it's like some sort of reference to like his acknowledgement that he did bad by his family and that he wasn't gonna do bad by this family. Like then it's
you see the
growth that he considers this crew his family, and this is, you know, he did what he had to for them.
Yeah, because you guys are my family. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then he dies, and then then we do the little montage we're talking about. And then I think,
is that the movie?
I think we got it. I think that's the end of the movie, guys.
Is that the
Holy shit.
It's weird. It feels weird. It feels like, I mean, I gotta still go fucking type it up, but like,
That would put us at 28 scenes, basically.
I mean, scenes. A lot of these are multiple scenes, but yeah.
No, I mean, it's there. It's like, you know, there's a lot of work for a second draft for sure, but like, that's a, you know, that's a movie. There's an anime in the middle of that movie, too.
That's true.
Here's the only idea I did, because I didn't want to derail this last episode. Do you know what you'd never seen, like, Limbo? Is like, I thought...
Like people playing Limbo.
No, I thought what would have been good is like, instead of... I mean, obviously everything we came up with is the right thing. But instead of seeing his brother, he actually wanders. And who does he see? It's Miss Wonderful. And he's like, what? And she's like, well, because the time compression, right, is infinite in Limbo.
Oh.
And he's like, what happened? And she's like, oh, I can't tell you that. And she's like, but like, the idea that it's like, theoretically, you would see everybody at a certain point.
Oh,
because it's just
they decide so to go
it's just
weird.
Limbo. It's just infinite time. But then you have this thing where it's like, he meets his enemy. that would be a cool thing for like a samurai movie or something.
Yeah.
Like the idea of two enemies in limbo and one knows what happens at the end of the fight.
Now, presumably, you only see people who got scared and jumped off the edge of heaven instead of going and facing their judgment.
But the idea that she's like mocking him, she's like, oh no, I died of old age. Don't worry about it. And it's like this whole thing, but she knows that anyways.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's like, I've come here to train you, and you, in killing me, has like I'm here to grant you the same gift, which is you taught me humility, so I'm here to teach you strength or whatever. Anyways.
Oh my god.
A cool samurai movie thing.
That's
to do
right.
Something.
You need to kill me in the past.
Yeah.
Dang.
Anyways.
I knew I'd find you
oh,
here.
Oh, that would be an interesting, like, hook for a movie would be like this, like, samurai or, like, you know, a guy who was a bad dude in life and has since, like, gone on, but, like, he wants to atone, so he reaches into the past to hire to train someone to kill him before he can do all this bad. That's super weird. That's, like, very...
No, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's the perfect amount of dumb cool, which is any good script, is if you think about it for a little bit longer, you're like, this is... Dumb.
That might be
but
the 300.
Cool.
No, that is pretty cool. That might be like the $300,000 version you do on your own, which is just somebody in a field the whole time, just chatting with it. It's like Seventh Seal, essentially. No, that's dope. The idea of a guy, okay, the idea of a bad guy who lives his whole life terribly, and then when he dies, he refuses to go to hell and he goes to limbo, and he's seeking out one of the first people he ever killed to be like, this person needs to kill me when I was bad. Like I regret everything I ever did in life. I need somebody to stop me from doing everything wrong I ever did. So I'm going to find the person. Anyways, all right. It's like Terminator, but in heaven. Anyways,
well,
weird tangent. That's I don't know what to
say. That's the heist, baby.
That's heaven heist. All right, when we come back, we'll see if we finished the movie or not.
Yeah.
Then, oh my gosh.
Then we're just going to see what we do next, I guess. Well, yeah. We'll talk about this after we read the scene.
Yeah, man.
All right.
Alrighty.
All right, stay tuned.
All right, Adam, Maximum Fun wants us to record like a promo to tell people that they should listen to The Greatest Generation. You want to do that?
No, I am tired of all the extra work. I just wanted to talk about Star Trek with my friend.
I think it would be good to like try and get some new listeners by appealing to the audiences of other shows. Like this will only take a minute or two. It could be good for us.
We sit down for an hour every week and talk about a Star Trek episode and make a bunch of idiotic fart jokes about it. It's embarrassing. If it got out that we made this show, I think it would make us unemployable.
Adam, I have bad news for you. We have tens of thousands of listeners at MaximumFun.org.
Oh my god. I think I'm gonna throw up.
The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. Every Monday on MaximumFun.org.
I'm really gonna be sick.
Exterior, beam of light, day. Rousing music swells as our crew steps up to the edge of that brilliant shaft of light. Their pockets bulge, brimming with gold and jewels. One by one, they look to each other, eyes ready and brave. If we pull this off, drinks are on me.
And if we don't,
tequila gives a devil-may-care smile. Then I'll see you all in hell! Yeah! With that, he jumps into the light and plummets like a falling rock. The rest of the crew let out battle cries and dive in after him. They fall through the light and snap into formation like a team of daredevil skydivers. We push in tight on Jin's face, stoic and determined, as the light around him grows brighter and brighter until we fade to white. Match cut two. Interior safe house, day, and pull out of the blinding flash of Miss Wonderful's firing pistol. Boom! Whiskey goes flying through the air and slams hard onto the ground, his eyes shut. Miss Wonderful steps through the door and takes in the rest of the room. She sees our crew lying catatonic on their cots, IV drips sticking out of their arms. She gazes at the heist board where the crew's whole absurd caper is laid out. She shakes her head, shuts her eyes, and gives a disappointed sigh. Behind her, Miss Wonderful's cadre of hunks storms into the room.
What do we do, boss?
She scowls.
Waste them.
The goons ready their guns. And all at once, our crew snaps awake back into their bodies. Their eyes shoot open and they spring into action. With the operatic pyrotechnic bombast that defines the heroic bloodshed genre, our final gunfight grips the screen and rocks your face like the best John Woo movie you've never seen. Gin, tequila, brandy, and cognac leap from their cots and take on their attackers. Their movements are as synchronized as they are deadly. Brandy snatches her shotgun and blasts away, while tequila flings scalpels every which way. Cognac dives through the fracas to Whiskey's side, while Gin gets in close with the syringes and gets his hands on an AK-47. Bullets, blades, blood, and bullion fly through the safe house as the roaring gunfight reaches a fever pitch. As Brandy and tequila cut down the last of the goons, Cognac stabilizes Whiskey's wounds like a seasoned battlefield medic. Gin makes a gutsy charge across the room, guns blazing, to draw Miss Wonderful's fire. He dives onto a rolly cart. She shoots. He returns fire. Their pistols flash and shots ring out. Jin's cart slams into the wall, and Miss Wonderful falls down dead on the ground. Silence and gun smoke hang in the air. Jin lies on the cart, breathing heavy. He calls out to his friends.
Everyone okay?
Tequila and Brandy pant for breath, standing amidst a pile of dead hunks, bloody scalpels, and smoking shotgun shells. They look themselves over. No wounds.
Clear.
Clear.
How's our patient?
Across the room, an exhausted Cognac holds a weak but bandaged and stabilized whiskey in her arms.
He'll live.
A weary smile forms on Jin's face.
Good.
Tequila hears the weakness in his voice. He looks up with a worried frown. Jin? Slow and shaky, Jin sits up on the cart. His shirt is riddled with bullet holes and soaked with blood. The rest of the crew rushes towards him. Jin! Jin reaches a feeble hand into his pocket, pulls out a bloody cigarette, sticks it in his mouth, and topples over onto the ground. In an instant, his compatriots are by his side, cradling him as he breathes his final ragged breaths.
What happened, man? What went wrong?
Nothing. Plan went off without a hitch.
You said you figured it out.
I did. I figured someone had to bite the bullet. Might as well be me.
Don't talk, Jin. We're gonna get you through this. He grabs Cognac by the collar. Do something! He'll die! But she just shakes her head sadly.
He's dead already.
It's okay. I'm ready to face the music. But before I go, listen.
He raises a shaky finger towards the sky.
Up there, I learned that family is everything. Love is everything. You guys are my family. I love you all.
Jin digs a fistful of gold coins out of his bloody suit coat and shoves them into Tequila's hand. He looks up with a pleading urgency.
Freddy, tell him I... Tell him...
Tequila nods, tears streaming down his face. We will.
Thanks.
Jin's hand goes limp. His eyes glaze over. He slumps back onto the ground and dies on the safe house floor. As his grief-stricken friends stare down at him, a super sad indie rock song starts playing like the end of a Bummer Scrubs episode. Begin montage. Exterior safe house, night. The somber, forlorn crew file out of the safe house one by one. Tequila stands at the door and hands them each a sack of gold and jewels, final payment for a job well done. In turn, whiskey, brandy, and cognac each give him a nod goodbye and walk off alone into the city. Tequila considers his own bag of gold with a kind of weary, questioning sadness. Was it all worth it? He takes one last look out at the safe house behind him, then shuts the door tight. Interior ferry boat, day. Jin stares out the window of the ferry boat to heaven. He wears a sad but peaceful acceptance on his face. Next to him, a terrified woman appears, gripping an imaginary steering wheel. As she looks around at her new surroundings and begins to freak out, Jin gives her a kind smile and offers a cigarette. Exterior Heaven City Gates, day. A jaded TS Angel waves towards the long line of souls waiting for initial judgment. Next! Jin steps up. He gives a courteous nod to the angel as he steps into the scanner. The angel, a little unnerved, punches a button and the scanner hums to life. Jin's hands tremble at his side. He closes his eyes and draws a long, deep breath to center himself. The TS Angel's face goes pale as he watches Jin's life play out on the monitor. The scanner flashes red. Jin exhales. The bottom of the scanner falls out and Jin plummets into hell. Exterior hell, night. Jin falls through the burning skies of hell. Wind whips through his hair. Fear fills his face. His breathing grows rapid as he tries to keep calm. Wham! Jin slams into the obsidian ground and finds himself in the court of Yama. Yama stares down at Jin from atop his massive throne. Jin looks up at the colossal god and awaits his sentencing. A long, tense beat. Then Yama points to a massive, infernal door made of pitch-black iron and covered in ominous carvings. Jin gazes at the door with terror in his eyes, but he summons his strength, puts on a brave face, and marches to the door like a dead man walking. Yama watches him, his face cold and indifferent. But as Jin reaches for the door, Yama stifles a mischievous smile. Jin, braced for eternal damnation, pulls the huge gate open, and pure white light hits his face from the other side. Jin gawks in astonished wonder. He looks back to Yama, confused. Yama gives him a courteous nod and motions for him to step into the light. Jin turns back to the light. Overwhelmed with emotion, he takes that first timid step across the threshold of the door. Exterior, ocean of light, day, and finds himself surrounded by endless, brilliant light. Jin looks around, confused, afraid, enraptured, delighted all at once. His fingertips and toes begin to break apart into tiny pinpricks of light. Soon his whole body seems to be splitting apart at the atomic level. In his last gasp of consciousness, Jin throws back his head with a joyous smile, then bursts into a shimmering vortex of energy. The vortex swirls, stretches, soars, and spins, faster and faster and faster. The ocean of light begins to transform into dark and tangible earth. The vortex shrinks and coalesces into a small, hard shape buried deep in the dirt. It's a seed, and from it a tiny green sprout emerges. The sprout wriggles its way up through the dirt, then bursts out onto the surface. Exterior grass, day. Light shines down on the little sprout as it rises through the dirt and over a patch of grass. Above the sprout, the sun and moon whirl through the sky at a blazing pace. The little sprout thickens and grows, and turns into a sapling tree. The tree's roots grow thick and strong. Branches stretch out from its trunk. Fruit grows among the leaves. It's an orange tree. A rapid-fire montage comes to a crashing halt. The orange tree stands proudly in a beautiful park under the hot midday sun. A breeze wafts through the air, and footsteps approach. An old monk pushes an even older woman in a wheelchair through the grass. The old woman has a picnic basket tucked under her arm. It is, of course, Freddy, 50s, and Lily, 90s. Freddy wheels his mother up to a picnic bench sitting under the orange tree. He sets their basket on the table and takes out a tasty homemade lunch. An orange falls from the tree and bounces onto the table next to their food. Freddy looks up at the tree, gives it a friendly smile, and bows in thanks. Gentle music plays as Freddy, Lily, and the orange tree share a nice family meal together. As they eat and chat and laugh, we float up into the air, higher and higher, over the picnic and over the gleaming, rebuilt hospital that stands right next to this idyllic park. Finally, we pan up to a beautiful, heavenly sky. And the voice of William Shakespeare rings in our ears.
Oh my God.
For though Jin died, he is reborn. Once greedy man, now wise acorn. Cut to interior library. William Shakespeare reclines in a comfy leather chair beside a roaring fire in a cozy library, reading aloud from a book called Heaven Heist by William Shakespeare. And now at last, a rest I'll take. I hope you liked my story break. And with that, Shakespeare closes the book and gives us a humble nod of thanks. Suddenly, the door bursts open. Freddy, Matt, and Will storm inside, angry.
Shakespeare, you rat bastard! You didn't write this one either!
Yeah, we did! We did, you stupid hack! Give us back our script!
Haha, fat chance, losers! See you on Rotten Tomatoes! Shakespeare throws a smoke bomb and vanishes in a puff of purple smoke. The story boys drop to their knees.
Shakespeare!
As their cries of grief echo up to heaven itself, a title card slams on screen. The end.
Oh my God, that's such a good ending.
That ending will not change.
That rat bastard. Oh, that's so good.
Wow.
Oh, man.
It's over.
We did it.
We did it. You know what? And when you put it all together, 150 pages isn't too crazy for a first draft. Especially not one written on a podcast.
It's a tight, lean, 150-page action comedy.
Boy, oh boy.
Man, you know what I didn't realize until you were reading the actual words? Is we may have written what essentially, there's almost no way that that end action scene is not maybe the most violent gunfight ever put on screen, because it is nothing but shirtless dudes. So there's
I thought of that too. It is extremely gory.
Right. There's no way to hide like bullet hits. Like it's just going to be nothing but gory mess of flesh. This is going to be this incredibly violent.
It's
battle
like
scene
a,
where
it's John
guys.
Wick meets the Chippendale dancers. Yeah, it's pretty gnarly.
Yeah. Man, it's going to be pretty wild. Shit. Man.
Well, boys, how do you feel?
Feels very strange.
I mean, it feels like we somehow wrote a script.
Yeah.
What do we do now?
I don't know. I'm honestly kind of speechless. I thought I was going to have, like, all of these things to say, but I'm honestly, like, it was such a wild ride to do this whole thing. I thought many times throughout that we were just going to give up and go back to the normal format. I'm so fucking happy and thankful that all of you, our listeners, stuck with us for this and cheered us on, because this was... I was really nervous about even attempting this for the longest time.
Yeah.
Same.
But it was really liberating, I thought. Like, not only just from the process of being like, you know, nothing will teach you it's okay to not be perfect better than writing a fucking screenplay in front of people. But like, I feel like this is the first real first draft I've ever written. And it was also like, I don't know, there was just something, it was an incredibly easy script to write in some ways. It was incredibly fun.
You know what it is?
And
to me, what was liberating is one of those things where I feel like we have a few of these ideas that are in the like, I love this idea, but we'll never do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we often try to come up with like crazy ways that like we could do it like after the fact, like or whatever. And this was one of those ones where it's like, we'll never like, you know, nobody wants us to actually write this script. Like this will never get sold. But maybe if we do it in our podcast, and like, I never thought we'd actually do it.
Yeah.
But we did. And now we have like a first draft of a script that like is, again, it's one of our favorite ideas for a reason. Like I still love
I'm super proud of this. Yeah. Like
it's strange, and it's definitely not a thing that we would ever one be able to do first and foremost, just like, especially as adults, like with one of which has a kid, you know what I mean? Like as adults in our 30s, like this is the kind of lark script you can mess around with in college, right? Like it's the kind of like whatever, let's just do a little fun thing. It's crazy to see this and be like, oh, this is something that we You can still lark around with it a little. You know what I mean? Like, that's honestly,
this felt the closest to me to, like, when we were writing season one of Video Game High School.
Yes.
Really? Interesting.
You know, like, you guys were living in, you know, an abandoned Coke factory and, you know,
it was a paint factory.
We were just a lot younger. Like, you know, when no one had kids, like, when you're in your early 20s like that, you can just kind of have this fuck it energy. And it felt really good to be back there and to just be, like, really just kind of going crazy. So, I don't know.
You know what it is? I think the difference with this one, I'll say that since VGHS season one, I think this is where I agree with that comparison, because I think it is true that this is the most this felt like, is that it's the first one that doesn't have this external pressure on it.
Exactly.
Like, season one was so wild. Yes. It didn't, like, we knew we were making it because we just did our Kickstarter and, like, you know, Freddie was so successful at that point that the agency was like, whatever, we'll pay for the rest of it. So we were just going to do it regardless of what happened, right? Season two and three had this own pressure of trying to live up to our own standards. And then since then, you know, we've written our first script that has to be special and, like, make a big splash when we sell it out. We've had scripts that people have paid for. We've had rewrites on a studio script. And, you know, we just recently finished a script that was like, the pressure was like, we need a script that will fucking sell. So that has its own pressure. And then this one was like, hey, we're, you know, it's a podcast. Like, let's just do this one because we want to do it because it's fun.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was really fun to write. Like, that was actually just a good time to write.
Yeah, it's like musicians get to be like, oh, we don't have to make a band thing. Let's just jam on some old funk tunes for a while. There's no equivalent in screenwriting, right? It's like you're either doing it for your dole, you're trying to do it to make a fucking living, or not at all. There's no, like, have a lark with it.
Man. Yeah, no, that's very true. Especially because screenwriting is like, I think, like, you know, people might do that with short stories or even books that you write because it's, like, kind of done when you're done with it. But a screenplay, it's like doing a blueprint for a house on a lark. Like, what the fuck is
happening?
It's not even done when you're done with it.
Yeah. Man.
Thank you guys to the audience so much for indulging us as we went down this wild ride. Matt and Freddie, thank you to the two of you for being the best writing partners a screenwriter could ask for.
No, you too, buddy.
You too, man.
This was a total delight. And
man, we're not even in person. We can't even do hugs or anything.
I know. Yeah. We're just like, you're staring at our monitors in quarantine.
Man.
This is our King Lear, though.
It's even got Shakespeare in it.
Yes, man, what are we going to do? I'd love to hear from the audience. What is any sort of, because I don't even know what
I
we
have
would
some
do
ideas.
For any sort of version of a, because obviously we're not going to go scene by scene on a second draft. But since the idea of this was kind of like the process of writing, even though, you know, obviously this isn't exactly how you write a script, I think this is about as close you'll get to, like, literally watching a script written, you know, from beginning to end. You know, it'd be interesting to see how we can maybe tackle some version of notes or a second draft on this show. Obviously we'll go back to the actual story break as well, but I'm curious as to, like, what you guys think is the best way to approach that.
Yeah, I have no idea, because to me, like, I'm trying to think of a version of that wouldn't be incredibly boring to listen to.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like kind of the main challenge. If you have any ideas, please let us know.
And I will say, by the way, from the podcast perspective, I definitely feel like this format, and by the way, big credit to Maximum Fun for when we went up to them and we said, hey, we have this idea to, like, change up the format of our show in a pretty major way. And they were very receptive to it. And they said, you know, like, whatever you guys think will work. And, you know, without that, like, support, and without the support of all you Fun Max Fun folks, like, we would not be able to do this. But a big part of it is, like, what I'm really interested in and what I think I'm really proud of is the format of this show, especially by the second half, really gelled into something I hope is, like, very listenable and very entertaining to listen to as we kind of figured it out and kind of had to kind of figure it out on the fly, right? It wasn't like one of those situations where we've been fortunate in the past where we can be like, oh, let's test out some formats and test out what the show should be before we, like, go live with it. This one was like, we were going live with it.
Hit the ground running.
Hit the ground running with it. You know, I definitely feel like we should all, like, take a moment to, like, read through and maybe have, like, a notes session with each other in terms of what we might address. But yeah, I don't know what to do with this.
I think whatever the final version is,
we should, like, do a little self-publish or something and let folks get their hands on it.
Oh, for sure. I think, one, I'm really proud of the script. Like, I think one or two more drafts, like, it's something that we should totally give our agents and be like, this is a movie. That's really fucking good. Hey, if Netflix will greenlight Bright, that's all I'm saying. So we can send this thing in. No, Heaven Heist is not over. It is definitely a wonderful idea, and I'm really proud of it. So we should definitely keep it going forward. I think what we should do next is with this whole shutdown of Hollywood, you know what's not gone made yet?
The Duke Nukem movie?
Hell yeah. Let's get that script done.
I was saying that as a joke. If you want to write the fucking Duke Nukem movie, I would do that right now.
Let's write the Duke Nukem movie one scene at a time and get that shit done. And then, I mean, I don't know. Maybe that will like get us kicked out of the industry. But the idea of like, we're going to write the script before you guys write the script and everybody's going to hear our script. So you better, at the very least, write something as wild as what we're going to put down on page.
It's like in There Will Be Blood when he's racing the other guy's pipeline to the coast. We will get to Duke Nukem and we will drink your milkshake, sir.
I was trying to think, like, what's an idea that we have that I would totally want to write like this? And, like, Duke Nukem is definitely the first one I think of. Like, the other ones I'm really proud of, I'm like, I don't want to write Why the Chicken Crossed the Road once a week on. But, like,
no, that it's needs too to be, serious.
That needs to be written, like, up in a cabin as we're all, like, sipping brandy and, like, forgot about our wives and questioning our own deaths as we think about this movie. But, like...
No, Duke Nukem. It's all about finding a story that is in the Venn diagram of being a good thing to listen to someone write on a podcast, yes, and being a good movie. And I think definitely Heaven Heist is right in the middle. I feel like Duke Nukem is probably more on the like fun to listen to than a good movie.
No,
you never know.
All right. Well, maybe if you guys have any thoughts on Facebook, let us know. Maybe we'll do another one of these. But I think for the time being, maybe we'll get back to some good old story
some
break.
Good
action.
Old fashioned story break breaks in the way that you're used to, the way that we're used to. That those social medias, by the way, hit us up at RJStoryBreak on Twitter and bit.ly/StoryBreakFB. Curious to hear your thoughts.
I would be remiss if I did not mention the incredibly wonderful and sexy piece of Jin fan art we got from MKE Second on Twitter. Just this fucking badass drawing of Jin. He's smoking a cig and like in the smoke you can see the hell money behind him, I think is what it is.
It's so good that when we do make this movie, because it's going to happen, and we get a casting agent, which you need for a movie, they ask you for quick summaries of the characters, and I'm not going to send them a summary of Jin. I'm just going to send them that picture and say, this is Jin. Find this man. It's a very good picture. Loved it.
Thanks also to Chad Ellis, who edits this podcast.
Thanks,
and as always,
Chad.
MaximumFun.org for supporting us through this ridiculous endeavor and supporting this podcast and a whole bunch of other great podcasts. You can find them at MaximumFun.org. That's going to do it for us this week. We're going to go back to some regular story breaks. We've had some really fun ideas gather as we've been doing this Heaven Heist one, so can't wait for you folks to hear that.
Yeah, baby.
So, until next time, thanks for listening. My name is Freddie Wong.
I am Will Campos.
My name is Matt Arnold. And I don't know, I just love riding with you guys. That's all.
Oh, same. Aww. Though.
The end.
Hey, I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin. Together, we're The Flophouse,
a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then talk about it.
Movies like Space Hobos, Into the Outer Reaches of the Unknown and the Things That We Don't Know, the movie, and also Who's That Grandma?
Zazzle Zippers, Breakdown 2, and Backhanded Compliment.
Elvis is a Policeman.
Baby Crocodile, and the Happy Twins.
Leftover Potatoes?
Station Wagon 3.
Herbie Goes to Hell.
New episodes available every other Saturday.
Available at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bye! Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.